We're holding on Chof Omid Bey's three lines from the bottom. We talked about yesterday about the concept that a person is supposed to sit Shiva for their second level relatives, meaning the relatives, meaning you have there's a person owns seven relatives that I mentioned in the Pasuk in connection with a Kohen becoming Tameh. And then we said the Chachamim expanded that to also include types of relatives like that that a Kohen can't become Tamei for, but nevertheless a person still sits Shiva for. For example, a brother from the mother's side and a brother or a sister from the mother's side, and a sister, whether she's man or sister who's married, where a Kohen wouldn't be Matame for her, but a person sits Shiva for her. We talked in that connection then about the second level relatives, namely, for example, a wife's parents or siblings or a grandson or whatever. So we said in principle you're supposed to sit Shiva for them as well. We said that in practice we don't do that nowadays because we assume the Avelim are Moichel on their covered, but the concept does exist. So now talking another detail about that, from which we're also going to learn a detail about the halachas of Kriya. So the Gemara says, Amema shochev le barbere. Amema's grandson passed away. Kora ilave, and so he tore Kriya for him, like we said before. Then osabre. Then when Amema's son came, Kora ba'ape, then Amema tore Kriya again in front of him. The idea being, in other words, that since the main reason that he's doing Avelos for his grandson is because his son is in Avelos, so therefore he figured, this is according to Rashi, we'll talk in a second, according to Tosfos, so therefore Amemar did Kriya in front of his son to participate in the Avelos with him. Idka demiyushav karda, then Amemar remembered at that point that he had torn Kriya sitting, and as we're going to say now, you're supposed to do it standing. Come Koram Umad, so he went and did Kriya a third time standing. So altogether, it comes out, according to Rashi's explanation, that Amemar had torn his clothes for the same mess three times. Tosfos says, what kind of a thing is that? Since when is it that if you did Kriya when you weren't around the relative that you have to do it again in front of them? So rather, Tosfos explains what happened was Amemar had torn one Kriya, but while he was sitting. Now his son came and he wanted to remind his father of the halacha that you're supposed to tear Kriya standing. But he didn't want to tell him outright, because not derech eretz to tell your father you forgot the halacha. So therefore, what he did was, so he stood in front of his father and tore Kriya, and that reminded Amemar, you know what, when I did Kriya also, I did it sitting, I better do it again. So it comes out, according to that he only did Kriya twice. And it was not like Rashi that he did one time when he was by himself, one time when he was with his son in honor of his son, and a third time to do it standing, but rather only twice. He did it one time. He wouldn't have had to do it again were it not for the fact that he had done it sitting. So Amalei Rav Ashi LaMeimer Kriya Umid Menolon. So Rav Ashi, who was a Talmud of Amemar, asked him, so where do you know that Kriya has to be done standing? So Dechtiv, because the Pasuk says, Vayokam Iyo Vayikra Es Me'iloi. So yeah, at the beginning of Sefer Iyo, you have the whole story over there where the Satan has convinced Hashem to allow him to test Iyo, and part of it was that Iyo is being told of one disaster after another, and the last one, the culminating one, is he's told that a big storm knocked down the house where all his children were, and all of his children were killed. So the Pasuk says, Vayokam Iyo Vayikra. He had got up and tore his robe. So you see it. So the Gemara is apparently assuming that Iyov was a Yid, which there are actually different opinions about that in Baba Basra. The majority opinion is there that he was a Yid. There are opinions there that not. In any case, the Gemara is obviously assuming that he was, or at least that we can learn a halacha from what he does. And therefore we see he stood up. So you see you have to stand up to tear Kriya. So the Gemara says, Elamayata, by that logic, you're telling me every time it says that a person stands, then he has to dafka do it standing. Elamayata, va'omad va'omar lechafati lekachta. When there's going to be chalitza, and part of the beginning of the process is that the Yavam comes in front of the Beis Din, and he stands and he says, lechafati lekachta, I don't want to marry her. And that's when we do the chalitza. Hochinami, are you going to say the same thing that he has to stand when he makes that declaration, loy chafatzi lakachta? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, ben yoshev, ben oimed, ben muta, that actually you could say this declaration, he could say it whether he's sitting or standing or leaning over. So you see that the word va'amad doesn't necessarily mean standing up. So why should we assume that the va'yakam Iyov specifically means to stand up? Amale. So Amema answers him.
How can we derive our lasa from the veem? We don't usually, don't we?
The whole concept of Avelos in Kriya is Dirabanan anyway, so sure, Dirabanan are entitled to use whatever Pasuk they want to support it. They don't need a Pasuk at all. They could just say, this is the Takana we made for the Jewish people and just follow it. But they want to have a Pasuk in support of it. There's nothing wrong with having a Pasuk in Iyov for it. But again, the question is, if we're saying that Vayokum by Iyov means that he stood up, then Va'omad Va'omar would also have to mean that he stands up when it comes to chalitza, and yet the actual chalitza has to be done standing fine, but the declaration, loy chafatzi v'kachta, does not. We said that it can be sitting or leaning over. So amalei, so that's what Amema answers him. Hosam like siv v'yamod. The difference is that by over there by chalitza, it doesn't say v'yamod v'yomar. It doesn't say he should stand up and he should say. Here it says he got up and he tore. In other words, the va'omad va'omar over there does not necessarily mean that he stands up, because then it would actually say as a command v'ya'amod and he should stand. Va'omad means he happens to be standing. Va'omar and he says, or even Tosfos says the va'omad. Sometimes, like in Gemara terminology, the word omad doesn't actually have to mean to stand up. It just means to go ahead and do something. A Torah springs from a Gemara we had the other day, va'omdu v'kidshu. Doesn't mean they stood up and did the kiddushin, it just means they went ahead and did the kiddushin. The same way over here, va'omad va'omar can mean he goes ahead and says, loy chafatzi l'kachta. Now, Torah points out, when you have va'omad by itself, then it does mean to stand up. For example, we say that edim have to stand up when they give their edus, because the pasuk says, va'omdu shnei ha'anashim, and from there we learn they have to stand up. But when it says va'omad va'omar or something like that, then it doesn't necessarily mean. But over here, by Iyov, since it says va'yokam va'yikra, and that not just in other words, he went ahead and tore, but literally it means he stood up and tore. Then therefore, we see from that kriya has to be done standing. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omar Rami Bachoma minayin the kriya shehim umad. How do we know that kriya has to be done standing? So Shenemar, as we just said, what Amema said, by Yochum Iyav Vayikra. The question with that is, Dilma Milsi Yeserto Hudovad, how do you know that it means he was actually required of Yalocha? Again, assuming as we are in this Gemara, that Iyav was a Yid and that he lived after Matan Torah. As I said, the Gemara in Bava Basra discusses that question. If he was a Goy, or if he lived before Matan Torah, then of course there's nothing to talk about. But assuming that he was a Yid and that his behavior in those psukim is something that we're meant to learn a din, at least a din drabonon from. So the question is, how do we know that he was required to stand up? Maybe he just did something extra. The Eloi Temahochi. After all, if you're not going to say that, I can show you right there in the Pesukim that there's something else that Iyov did that he was not required to up Yalocha. The Pasuk continues by Yogos Asuroshoi, that he pulled hair out of his head. So Hochi Nami, are you going to say the same thing? And Oval is not required to do that. So you can't prove anything. In fact, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, loisa simu kocha bein einechem l'meis, that you're not allowed to make a bald spot on your head because of a mess. So we would have to say, in that case, that by Yogos Asroshe was not just because of the deaths of his children that were reported to him, but all the other disasters that had happened to him as well, where fine, a person is allowed to tear out his hair for those, but there's certainly no mitzvah to do so. So you can't prove from there necessarily. Ela mehocha. Rather, we're going to prove that you have to stand up for kriya from a different pasuk. Where there, we're talking about a yid after Matan Torah. The pasuk says about David Amelach, by Yochum Amelach, by Yikras Begadav. The pasuk tells the story over there after Avshalom had killed his half brother Amnon. We have a whole story over there that Amnon raped Tamar, and eventually Avshalom, who was her full brother, took revenge on him, etc. Anyway, the Pasuk describes how after Amnon was killed, all the other sons of David who were there by that same party ran away. And then the Pasuk describes how a mistaken report reached David that all of his children had been killed. So the Pasuk says, Vayokav HaMelech Vayikras Begadav, he got up and tore his clothes. And the Pasuk continues, Vayishkav Arza, and he lay down on the ground, which we're going to explain that phrase in a minute. And then one of his nephews, who was also one of his advisors, explained to him that no, it's not all your children were killed, only Amnon. Anyway, the point is, the pasuk says he got up and tore his clothes. Okay, the Gemara says, so what? Duma milsi yaseir to Ovid. Still, okay, it's after Matan Torah. Still doesn't mean that he's required to stand up to tear his clothes. Maybe he decided on his own. Maybe he decided on his own to do that. So in other words, okay, you can say kriya he was required to do, but midrabanan at least, and let's assume that takana had already been made. There's some place where it says that Moshe Rabbeinu already set up the concept of shivas yemei avelos for the Jewish people, but maybe the standing is not required al pi halacha. The Eloi Temahochi. Again, if you're not going to say that, if you're going to say that everything we see that David did in those psukim is required up Yalacha, then by Yishkav Arza Hochinami, are you going to say that when the pasuk continues, he lay down on the ground is also something that an oval is required to do? On the contrary, Vahatanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now, we talked about previously, and we're going to talk about again later on in the Perek, about the concept of kfiya samita, that an oval is supposed to turn over his bed and lie on the underside of it, which we said a couple of times already. Tosfos mentions it over here that nowadays we don't do that for a couple of reasons. One of them being that our beds are constructed differently, so the turning them over wouldn't be as noticeable, and another reason being because the goyim among whom we live are going to think that we're doing witchcraft against them or something. Anyway, but the original halacha was that an oval was supposed to do kriya samita, and a braisa says, and the point of kriya samita is supposed to be that you lie on that on that turned over bed, and also that you sit on it. So the braisa says, yoshav agabi mita, if the oval during shiva sits on a regular bed, agabi kise, or on a chair, agabi udyoni gdola, or on a large udyoni. Rashi defines udyoni as machteshes gdola, a large mortar. So it's a mortar is a container, is a keli that you use for grinding and crushing things. So it's a big hollow. It's a big hollow container. So let's say you could imagine if let's say the size of a garbage can or something. So like you turn it over and sit on top of it. Different rishonim have different other definitions of what an udyoni is. What an udyoni is, it's a board that's used to cover a well, several other possibilities, whatever the case, the point is, it's something that a person could conceivably sit on, low to the ground, and it's not something to normally sit on. G'doyla agabe karka mikulon, the actual girsa is supposed to be on the side from the rif, g'doyla mikulon omru, the chachamim went beyond all of that, and they said, even more than that, afilo agabe karka, even if the person sleeps on the ground itself, or sits on the ground itself, lo yotze yidei chevasa, so he's not yotze. In other words, the idea is you dafka have to sit, that the chamim dafka wants you to turn over your bed and sit and lie on that. But Omer Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Yechanan says, what do you mean lo yotze yidei chevasa? Shelo yikim kviya samita, that if a person does any of these things, he's not yotze, the mitzvah dirabanan of kviya samita. So therefore, so we see though that David in the pasuk is described over there as lying on the ground, and we're saying that an oval is not required to do that, and in fact, it's not. He's not even yotze the mitzvah of that aspect of avelus by doing that. So you see that there's at least one thing that David did that's completely optional. So how do you know that the standing to do kriya is something that's required up yellow? So he answers him, Kain Arza. It means when it says, so Rami Bachama answers, when it says that by Yishkav Arza, doesn't mean that David actually lay down on the ground. It means it was like on the ground. In other words, he did exactly that. He was Koy from Mitosa. He turned over his bed. He sat on the upside down bed. And that's called Kain Arza, similar to being on the ground, because for a king like David HaMelech, it's like a loss of dignity. It's something that an oval would do. So therefore, it can't amount to sitting on the ground. So therefore, the pasuk can describe it as that, even though it was actually sitting on an overturned bed. So we can still say that the fact that he stood up to do kriya is required up yalom. So now let's talk about, more generally, let's start talking about the various things that an oval is also to do. We gave a list of them at the beginning of the perek, mainly because we wanted for each one, we wanted to bring a pasuk or a source for the concept that an oval has to or has to not do these things. And then for each one, we talked about whether a menuda has to do them and whether a mitzvah has to do them. So now let's go through them more specifically. Tana Rabbanan. The elu dvarim sha'oval also behan. The following are the things that an oval is not allowed to do. Also b'malacha, he's also to do malacha during shiva, and all these things we're going to go through and we're going to talk about the details of what exactly is and isn't allowed. So he's also b'malacha over the chitza. He's also to bathe over sicha, and to smear ointments or oils or whatever on his skin over tashmish amita and to have relations over ne'ilas a sandal. He's not allowed to wear leather shoes. But also licorice betoto over the vim of Ksuvim. He's also to read any part of Tanakh. So first of all, Tosfos points out, now so far we have several things that an oval is also to do, which are not listed over here. At the beginning of the Perek, we talked about that an oval is also not allowed to, first of all, we left out things that an oval has to do, like turning over his bed. Okay, so we're talking only about things that he's also to do. We didn't mention that he's not allowed to do laundry. Tosfos says that it's included in the fact that he's not allowed to bathe. But there are things that are missing over here. The Ritva says, look, okay, it's one of these things, ton of Bashir. We often find that a Mishnah or a Braisa will give a list, and it's not meant to be exhaustive. It mentions some things and it leaves out some others. We also didn't mention that an oval is allowed to cut his that an oval is not allowed to cut his hair, for example. As far as also licorice batoto over Nevi'im of Ksuvim, Tosfos gets into a discussion, would he be allowed to read? Now, on Tisha B'Av, for example, we know you're not allowed to learn Torah either, but you're allowed to learn the sad parts of Torah. For example, you're allowed to learn the parts of Eicha that have nevuos of trouble and disaster that are going to be on the Jewish people. You're allowed to learn Megillas Eicha. You're allowed to learn the Gemara in Perek HaNizokin that talks about the Churban, etc. Would the same thing apply to an oval? So first Tosfos brings from Rabbi Tam, who said that during Avelos, it's also. Because after all Gemara over here is not making any exception. But then later on, Rabbi Tam changed his mind and said that it's mutter. That in the end, that is actually the halacha. So an oval nowadays is allowed to learn, the same parts of Torah as you're allowed to read, as you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Okay, so going back to the Gemara, so he's also to read Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, meaning the happy parts of them. The Lishnas B'Mishnah, he's not allowed to learn Mishnayas. The Medrash of Halachas, of Ashas of Agadas, he's not allowed to learn Medroshim or Halachas or Gemara or Agada. The original word in the Gemara, instead of Vahashas, by the way, was over Talmud, where Talmud means the discussion of what the Mishnayas are all about, which is what the Gemara, as we have it, is. The censors in various times didn't like the word Talmud for one reason or another, and therefore they often changed it to Shas. Anyway, so an oval is not allowed to learn any of those things, but continues the Braisa. Now, if the Rabbim need him, meaning, in other words, they need him to teach Torah, to darshan, then Eino Nimna, then he doesn't have to hold back. He's allowed to do it. He's allowed to do it during Avelos. In fact, it happened one time that Rabbi Yossi's son passed away in Sipori, and Rabbi Yossi, during the Shiva, went into the Beis Medrash and darshan the whole day, because that was a case of Rabim Tzrichim. He was the Rav of the city, and they needed him to teach them Torah. So therefore, he was allowed to do that. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rabba Baba Chana Isra Be Milsa. Rabbi Baba Chana, a bad thing happened to him, which is the Gemara's way of saying that one of his relatives passed away. Now, usually he would go out and he had a regular scheduled drosha, which is called pirka in Aramaic. So he thought that he shouldn't go out to the pirka to darshan. So Rav Chanina told him what we just said in the Braisa. If the rabbim need you, then you don't have to hold back. Since the rabbim need you, they expect to have your pirka, then you're allowed to, because they need you to teach them Torah. In other words, there's nobody else available who can take over. We're talking about, in other words, that there were in Rabbi Yossi's city of Tzipori, or wherever Rabbi Baba Chana lived, there was nobody else of his caliber who would be able to take over. So Rava Bachana figured in that case, then he should do the drosha like normal, where we find throughout Shas that they would have an Amora standing in front of them, also known as a Turgamon, to explain what they're saying to the Tzibur. So the Rav, the Rosh Hashiva, would say whatever he's saying quietly and briefly, and then the Amora or the Turgamon would explain it, would say it out loud and explain it for the Tzibur. So Rav Baba Chana figured, okay, if I'm going to give the Pirka, then I should do it in the normal way with an Amora. Amalei Rav, however, Rav told him, no, Tanya, over Vajla Yamid Turgamon. The Braisa says, on the other hand, even if the Oval is darshaning for the Tzibur, because the Tzibur needs him, he's not allowed to do it with a Turgamon. For one reason, because in other words, even though we're giving him a dispensation to do it, because Rabim Tzrichim Loi, nevertheless, he has to make as much of a shinui as possible, and the way to make that shinui is to not use him a Turgamon. So the Ela Hechi of it, so how do you do it? The Rav himself can't give the Drosha without that kind of assistance. So the answer is Kihod Tanya. He does the way we learn in a Braisa. Maiso b'nes umes b'noish Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi. It happened that Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, this is the regular Tanner of Yehuda throughout Shas. So his son once passed away. V'nichras the Beis Medrash. So he went into the Beis Medrash to teach Torah, because again there was nobody who could take over for him. V'nichras Rabbi Hanani ben Akavya v'yoshev b'tzidai. Then Rabbi Hanani ben Akavya, who was one of his Talmidim, came and sat next to him. The lochash hula of Chanani ben Akavya. So they had, there was a relay over here. Rabbi Yehuda whispered whatever it was that he was going to teach, each point, to Rabbi Chanani ben Akavya. But Rabbi Chanani ben Akavya, the Turgamon, he in turn told it to the Turgamon. The Turgamon is Shmuel Rabim, and then the Turgamon announced it to the public. So that way, there was still a shinui where if it wasn't doing shiva, then Rabbi Yehuda would be telling the Turgamon directly. And now, like this, he has a go-between there. He has Rabbi Hanani ben Akavya. So that's enough. So now, what is the actual halacha nowadays? Do you actually have this concept of Rabim Tzrichim Loi, so that he should be allowed? So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings this concept that if Rabim Tzrichim Loi Mutter, the Ramah says that nevertheless, the general minhag is that he doesn't, and even when he does, it's going to be, for example, they need him to paskin halacha, for example, not just stam to give a drosha. With that said, I mean, we talked about before, we talked a couple of times already about the concept of halacha kedibra hamekel be'evil, and in general, there are various aspects in which, in particular, the rabbeim will often mekel in, where possible, in dinim of avelos, and we find, for example, that during the time, when the Rebbe was sitting shiva after Chof Beis Shrat, for example, he was at home, but he still said sichas, and on Shabbos he went in Fabreng and said a mimer and everything pretty much like normal. So in that case, this would be an example of Rabim Tzrichim Loi. In particular, there's an idea in that connection that especially on Shabbos to not do it would be showing avelos b'fahesia. That Shabbos, in particular, for example, that Shabbos after Chof Beis Shrat was Shabbos Mevorchim, that I've always Fabreng done it. If he didn't, then it would be demonstrating avelos b'fahesia, and you can't do that. So that would be a reason why Dafka that ever Fabreng on that Shabbos and said a mimer like normal. Further on that din in Shulchan Aruch, the Taz and the Shach discussed that maybe by the same token, a teacher of a Malamed Tinoikis maybe would be allowed to teach during Shiva for the same reason, because Rabim Tzrichim Loi, because after all, the kids, Hevel Piyam Shal Tinoikis Shabbos Rabban, that kids should be learning Torah is a tremendously important thing, and therefore it can be considered even a Dover or Avod if he doesn't teach them. So Lamaisa, nowadays you don't really see that. A teacher is in Avelos, Rahman al-Islam, you just get a substitute for the few days. But in principle, the Taz and the Shach talk about that he might be Mutu, at least after 3 days of Avelos, maybe even earlier than that. Further on this, another thing that an Oval is, another restriction on an Oval, Tanan Abanan, Oval Gimel Yomam HaShanim Oso Aniach Tfilin. During the first 3 days of Avelos, an Oval is not allowed to put on tefillin. Mishlishi va'elach, from the third day and on, ushlishi b'chlal, and that includes the third day, mutol laniach tefillin, then he's allowed to put on tefillin. Now, what does a mishlishi va'elach ushlishi b'chlal? So there, on the side of it here, there's a reference to a Ran in Sukkah that discusses that what it means is, in other words, we're saying on the third day he's allowed to put on tefillin, according to this man de Omer, but he would have to wait until after Netzachama. Normally, you could put on tefillin anytime from Mishayakir, anytime from when it's light enough outside that you'd be able to recognize somebody who you sort of know from a distance of 4 amas. Which is a while before Netzachama. It's after Alois HaShachar, but before Netzachama. But here you need that at least you should have the beginning of the third day, and then you can say Mikhtasayim Kekoloi. So therefore, you'd have to put on tefillin only after Netzachama. And then continues the Braisa, the Imbo Ponim Chadoshes, if new people came who haven't yet been there to visit him during Shiva, Einei Cholitz, he does not have to take off the tefillin that he's wearing. Even though people might, the people who are coming there now might think that, look, they see him wearing tefillin on the third day. They might think that he wore tefillin on the first 2 days as well, which we just said, according to this opinion, he's not supposed to do. Nevertheless, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer says there's no problem with that. He can continue wearing the tefillin. Remember, in those days, they wore tefillin throughout the day. Rabbi Yeshua says not 3 days, but rather, Obel Beis Yomim Rishonim also laniach tefillin. It's the first 2 days that he's also to put on tefillin. Misheni, Visheni Bechlal, beginning the second day and including the second day itself, in other words, again, as we said, after Netzachama, on the second day, Mutar laniach tefillin, then he would be allowed to put on tefillin, but Rabbi Yeshua is machmir. On the other hand, so he's makel as far as what day he can start putting on tefillin again. He's saying the second day instead of the third day. On the other hand, he's machmir v'imbo ponim chadoshes cholot. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says, if new people come to the Shiva house, then he would have to take off the tefillin when he sees them so that they don't think that he's putting on tefillin when he's not supposed to. So, Omer of Masna, my time at Rabbi Eliezer. Why does Rabbi Eliezer say that you have to add that only on the third day does he start putting on tefillin? So, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayitmu Yimei Bechi Evel Moshe. It says the days of the mourning of Moshe were ended. So the word Yimei is a plural, which implies 2 days. So therefore, you need two. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the most intense Avelos, in other words, the Machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua is basically, when is the most intense part of the Avelos? Is it 2 days or is it 1 day? So Rabbi Eliezer is bringing a proof from Moshe Rabbeinu. You see that the most intense degree of Avelos was 2 days, Yimei. So therefore, you have to have two full days that he doesn't put on tefillin. And then on the third day, after Netzachama, already he's allowed to. Omer of Eina, my time is Rabbi Yeshua. On the other hand, Rabbi Eina says, so what's Rabbi Yeshua's reason who says that you need only 1 day? Because the Pasuk says, V'achrisa ki yoymar, the Pasuk says, the after effect of it, the day after it, is going to be like a bitter day. So we see, in other words, a bitter day, meaning the bitter day of the beginning of Avelos. So we see that the most intense bitterness and grief is on that first day. So therefore, you only need 1 day that he can't wear tefillin. So the Gemara asks, Rabbi Yeshua Nami Hoksi Bayitmu Yimei B'Gemara, knew what is Rabbi Yeshua doing with Rabbi Eliezer's pasuk about Moshe, about the mourning for Moshe, that where it says that there were 2 days. Amalach, Rabbi Yeshua will answer you, Shiny Moshe, the Takif Evlai. It's different by Moshe. They had intense mourning, much more than usual. So by them, their grief, their most intense degree of grief lasted for 2 days. But normally, when anybody else passed away, then it's only 1 day. The Gemara even tells us in Temura that during the time of the mourning of Moshe Rabbeinu, they forgot hundreds of details of halachas. So you see, in other words, how intensely they were mourning him. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua can well say that over there it was Yimei, but normally it doesn't have to be. Okay, but Rabbi Eliezer Nami Hoksiv Achrisa Ki Yemar. What is Rabbi Eliezer doing with Rabbi Yeshua's pasuk that mentioned the bitter day, implying that it's only 1 day? He says, okay, ikumirir chad yomu. Fine, the most intense bitterness is 2 days, but the most intense avelus, which is fine, a lesser stage than bitterness, but still it lasts an extra day. Therefore, for an extra day, he shouldn't be putting on tefillin. Okay, so who's the halacha like? Oma ula, halacha k'rabbi Eliezer b'chalitza, b'halacha k'rabbi Yeshua b'hanocha. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer as far as not having to take them off. This is another example of this idea that we said that halacha could give our mekel be'evil. Since when it comes to taking off the tefillin, Rabbi Eliezer is the one who's mekel. He says that even if ponim chadoshes come, you don't have to take off the tefillin, then Ula is saying the halacha is like him in that. So you don't have to take off. So once the oval starts putting on tefillin again, he does not have to take them off even when ponim chadoshes come. But halacha could be sure. But hanacha, the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua when it comes to when did he start putting them on the second day, not on the third day, like not on the third day, like Rabbi Eliezer says. But Iboyo Lahu. So now the question becomes, Basheni La'ula, Choylitza Eni Choylitz. What does Ula mean by that? He says, Halacha Rabbi Eliezer Bachalitz, Halacha Rabbi Yeshua Bachanocha, but does he mean that? Does he mean that only beginning from the third day on does he not have to take off the tefillin, like Rabbi Eliezer is saying? Or is he saying, even when he puts on tefillin on the second day, like Rabbi Yeshua, that he doesn't have to take it off? Or maybe he means that since Rabbi Yeshua himself, after all, is saying that you can put him on the second day, but you have to take him off upon him, Chadosh has come, maybe Ula means to Paskin, like Rabbi Yeshua, in that whole thing. So he's just saying, in other words, when it comes to the third day and on, then we don't accept what Rabbi Yeshua is saying. Rabbi Yeshua would be saying that not just the second day, but also the third and the fourth, and throughout the Shiva, anytime Ponim Chadoshes are coming, you would have to take off the tefillin. So maybe Ula is saying that fine, from the third day and on, since anyway, even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that the third day you're allowed to put on tefillin, so we would say that at that point, we don't have to follow Rabbi Yeshua and take them off every time Ponim Chadoshes come. But maybe he would mean that on the second day, which neither one of them actually, after all, allows you to wear tefillin unrestricted on the second day. Rabbi Eliezer is not allowing it at all. Rabbi Yeshua is allowing it, but only he says you have to take it off. So maybe Ula means that on the second day, you would actually have to take them off every time Ponim Chadoshes come. So what is it according to Ula? Toshma, we can bring a proof. Omar Ula, that Ula himself says, yes, he would have to take off the tefillin and put it back on even 100 times a day. In other words, exactly that. Whenever Ponim Chadoshes come, he would take off the tefillin. Whenever they leave, he can put them back on. Tani Nami Hochi, in fact, we learn like that in a Braisa. Yehuda ben Tema Omer, Cholot Maniach, he has to put on, he has to take off the tefillin and put them back on even if it's 100 times a day. Put them, take them off every time Ponim Chadoshes come, put them on every time that those people leave. Now there are achronim who talk about even if we say that that's the case, that may only be in those times when they wore tefillin all day. So then you would have to do that. Nowadays we only wear tefillin for shachris. So maybe that whole concept wouldn't apply. We wouldn't say that he has to be cholitz every time ponim chadoshes come. In practice, we see that in a shiva house the oval does put on tefillin and he doesn't take them off no matter who's coming to visit. So that would be because anyway we only wear tefillin during shachris. Mind you, by the way, now it comes out from our Gemara over here that on the first day everybody would agree that you don't put on tefillin. Now one thing in that is what happens first of all if the kvura is not on the same day as the misa, then there are achronim who say that's different. Then maybe even on the day of the kvura he would put on tefillin. Now, what about if the Misa and the Kavura are on the same day? So then it's interesting, actually, even though we're saying on the surface that an oval does not put on tefillin on the first day according to anybody, nevertheless, there are sforim that talk about that there is that an oval could put it on the first day as well. And in fact, so the Rebbe described he once went to the Menachem Oval by someone, and he mentioned that the Friedrich Rebbe's Minhag, for example, and the Rebbe did this as well, put on tefillin even on the first day, even on the Yom HaMisa itself, but without a bracha, both Rashi's and Rabbeinu Tam's. So that's what we do, even on the first day, and even if the Misa and the Kavura are on the same day, after the Kavura, you put on tefillin, but without a bracha. Okay, so getting back to the Gemara. Rava Omar, Rava says, not like Ula, Kivin Shi Niach Shuv Eini Cholitz. No, once you put on the tefillin, you don't have to take them off anymore. So already on the second day, once you're allowed to put them on, according to Rabbi Yeshua, then not like Ula, who's saying that you would not like Ula, and not like Yehuda ben Tema and the Braisa, who are saying that you'd have to take them off every time Ponim Chadoshes come. No, Rava is saying once you put them on the second day, then you're allowed to keep them on even the whole day. So the question is, how could Rava be saying that? We discussed earlier the question of how many days of Avelos do there have to be before Yom Tov, for Yom Tov to cancel the Avelos. Good morning, Yaakov. How many days of Avelos do there have to be before Yom Tov, for Yom Tov to cancel it? So we said the Tana of our Mishnah on the surface said 3 days, and then we had a note in Rashi that saying maybe it's Lav Dafka, but then we had a Braisa that mentioned 3 days, and then we had an opinion that said that only that you only need Yom Echad or Shah Achas. We said that ultimately Bishilul says Afilu Yom Echad, and we said the Halacha is like that. But Rava had said the halacha is like Tana Didan, whether that means the Tana of our Mishnah, whether it means the Tana Kama of the Braisa, whatever. Rava himself had said that the first 3 days of Avelos are the main thing. And therefore, unless you have 3 days of Avelos before Yom Tov, then Yom Tov doesn't cancel it. You'd have to make up the rest of the days of Avelos after Yom Tov. So how can Rava himself be saying that on the second day you're already allowed to put on tefillin? That's the question. Rava himself says the halacha is like our Tana, who says that you need 3 days before the 3 days of Avelos, which is the main thing of Avelos, before Yom Tov will cancel it. The same way, according to Rava, you should have to wait till the third day to put on tefillin. The answer is mitzvah shiny. The answer is that Rava would say it's different when it comes to a mitzvah. Because over here, we're talking, putting on tefillin is a mitzvah after all. So therefore, we wanted to put it on as soon as possible. And therefore, Rava is going to say that he can already put them on, that he can already put them on the second day. And that once he puts them on, he doesn't have to take them off. Okay. On to a new topic. So now we said before that one of the things an Ovel is not allowed to do during Avelos is Malacha. So let's talk about the details of that. Tonen Abana. Ovel, Gimel, Yom HaShoinim, Osir B'Malacha. On the first three days of Avelos, an Ovel is not allowed to do Malacha. V'afilu Oni, I'm a Spanish, I'm not Tzedaka, even if it's a poor person who's supported by Tzedaka and he needs to work for a living, nevertheless, he's not allowed to do Malacha during that time. Mikan V'Elach, Osir B'Tzina, B'Seich B'Sei, after the first 3 days, he's allowed to do Malacha in private inside his house. Well, Isha Tovim Pelach B'Seich Besa, and a woman, if a woman is in Avelos, she's allowed to spin thread with a spindle in her house, which is also a kind of a quiet kind of malacha that doesn't have much of a piercing to it. Tosfos discusses this that we're saying that an Oni is allowed to do work the last 4 days of Shiva. Are we talking about specifically, we're continuing the case where he's mispounis min tzedakah, where he's being supported by tzedakah, and therefore we want to allow him to go back to work as soon as possible? Or are we talking about the last few days he would be allowed to do malacha? So Tosfos discusses that the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that a person should not be doing malacha b'chlal during the 7 days, where there are cases where he's allowed to after 3 days, although they bring something from the Yerushalmi. Tosfos actually brings it that tovim me'eiro l'shchein of a person like that, if an oni is in a situation where after 3 days he has to go back to work and he has to work during the rest of his shiva, because otherwise he's not gonna have food to put on his table, then the Yerushalmi says on that Tovei Me'eira that a curse should come on the relatives of, not the relatives, the neighbors, rather, of such a person who don't look after him during that Shiva to supply him with food so he doesn't have to go to work. The reason, by the way, the Rishonim also brings something from the Yerushalmi.
Anyway, what's so special about 3 days? And it says an interesting thing. The neshama during the first 3 days, it's left the body, but it's still like it doesn't know what's going on. It wants to return to the body. As far as it knows, it's like every night for however many years, it's been leaving the body and going up to Shemayim every night, and then in the morning it returns. So now also it expects to return. After 3 days, the body is already starting to decay. Then already the neshama realizes, so to speak, that it's not returning to this body, and not at least not until Tchias and Mesim, and therefore it gives up. But that's why the 3 days are considered something special in themselves. So that's the basic halacha. An oval is not supposed to do malacha during the 7 days of Shiva at all. But if he's an oni amispanis menat tzedakah, then if necessary, he can go back to work after 3 days. But the chachamim criticize very sharply the neighbors of such a person who don't take care of him and don't make sure that he shouldn't have to go to work throughout that time. Tana Rabbanan, another braisa says, another rule about an oval, oval gimel yamim harishanim ena hoylech lebeisa oval. An oval, so suppose he has another relative or another friend of his who was also sitting Shiva. So during the first 3 days, he would not go to the house of that other oval. He would stay where he is. Mikan ve'elach hoylech, after those 3 days, he could go to another oval's house. Ve'ena yoshev b'mokam ha-menachemim, ela b'mokam ha-misnachemim. But he doesn't sit in the place where the menachemim sit. Like this, you have in those times, there was a special area designated for the Avelim, and then there was a special area designated for the Menachemim. And we have, to a certain extent, we have something similar nowadays, where you have, you know, you'll have the row of low chairs over there for the Avelim, and then you'll have regular chairs around them for the Menachemim. So here it's a similar idea. In other words, so he's going to be Menachem Oval, somebody else. He himself, being an oval doing shiva, he won't sit in the place of the menachemim on the regular chairs together with everybody else. Rather, he'll sit in the place of the misnachemim in the area where the other avelim themselves are sitting. So nowadays we don't really do that. Nowadays, even after the first 3 days, we don't really have this din. You don't really find that an oval goes to be menachem other avelim at all. Okay, another one. Tanan Abanan. During the first 3 days of Avelos, an oval is also to greet anybody with shalom. Mikan ve'elach, between 3 and 7 days, meshiv, he can answer. Somebody says to him, shalom aleichem, he can answer, ve'ein shoyol, but he doesn't initiate the greeting. Mishloisha, mikan ve'elach, shoyol meshiv kedavgay. After that, after the seven days of Shiva, then he can ask, where he can say shalom to some shalom aleichem to somebody else and respond shalom and respond to somebody else's shalom aleichem in the normal way. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean shloisha yom shenim osu b'sheila shalom? You're telling me you're not allowed to do sheila shalom the first 3 days? V'hatanya, what we learn in a braisa, ma'isa u'meisu bonav shel Rabbi Akiva. It happened once that Rabbi Akiva's sons passed away. We don't really know of a lot of children of Rabbi Akiva. We know of, so here we find that they had two sons who passed away. There was Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, which Tosfos mentions in a few places, may have been a son of Rabbi Akiva, and that he may have been called ben Korcha because Rabbi Akiva was bald. There's the famous story in Masechta Shabbos about Rabbi Akiva's daughter was going to be getting married, and Rabbi Akiva was told many years earlier by astrologers that she's going to be bitten by a snake, and in the end she was saved from that because she had given tzedakah to a poor person. She had given him her plate of food on the night of her wedding. I think in Masechta Smachos it mentions a son of Rabbi Akiva named Rabbi Shimon who passed away. So here we're saying that there were two sons of Rabbi Akiva who passed away. So nichnasu ko yisrael b'yisbudum hesped gadol. So everybody came, the whole Jewish people came, and they made a tremendous hesped for them. This is Rabbi Akiva's children, after all. B'shas p'tirasan, when they were getting ready to leave after that, omad Rabbi Akiva al safsal gadol, Rabbi Akiva stood up on a big bench so everybody could hear what he has to say. For Omar, and he says, achenu b'yis yisrael shmo, our brothers, the house of Israel, listen to what I have to say. Afilu shnei bonim chasanim, even if these two children had passed away, were not just children, but even if they had been chasanim, where then the grief over their passing would be even more intense. Even so, menucham hu, still he, meaning I, feel comforted b'shvil kavod shasisem, because of the kavod that you gave me by coming to the levaya and coming to the hesped. And he continues, now, after all, why did you come? The imbishvil Akiva bosem. You didn't just come because you heard that Akiva's children passed away. Harekama Akiva bashuk. After all, there are many other Akivas in the street. So in that sense, I'm nothing special. Ella, kach amartim. It must be that you said, as the pasuk says, Torah salikov beliboy. and the Torah of Hashem is in his heart. In other words, you didn't come just because I'm Akiva or Rebbe Akiva. You came because of the Torah that I learned. You wanted to show honor to the Torah. Well, in that case, all the more so, you have a double reward from Hashem because you came not just to be Menachem Avol, not just to do a chesed for me, but also you did for the honor of the Torah. So he tells them, go to your houses in peace. Now that's She'el HaSholem. And we see that this was during the first 3 days. So you're telling me that an Avol during the first 3 days is not allowed to do She'el HaSholem and not even allowed to answer when somebody else gives him Sholem. But here you say Rabbi Akiva is telling them, L'chul v'teichem l'sholem. The answer is, Kovod Rabim Shain. It's different when you're talking about the Kovod of the public, where then, in this case, you have to be said, the whole Jewish people were there. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is allowed to tell them Sholem. But we're talking about on a one-on-one, you're talking about when one person comes and gives him Sholem, or one person, the Ovel, wants to give him Sholem, then he wouldn't be allowed to. So the Gemara continues, Migimel Vad Zayin Mei Shiva Ein Shoyel. So we said from the last 4 days of Shiva, if somebody says Sholem to him, he can answer back. But Mikan ve'elach shoyel meshiv kedavka. After that, after Shiva, then we said he can say shalom and answer shalom like normal. But the Gemara says a reminu. I have a contradiction. A brisa says hamotzes chaveri oval. If a person finds somebody else is an oval, b'soich lamed yoim. So if it's during the first 30 days after the death. Then the other person speaks words of comfort to him. He says to him, "Amokim yinachem eschem," or whatever. The enes shoyel b'shloimo. He doesn't say shalom to him. He doesn't ask how he's doing. He doesn't say shalom to him. La'achar lamed yoim, after 30 days shoyel b'shloimo. The enes medaber imetanchumen. Then after 30 days, it's the other way around. Then he can say shalom to him, and he doesn't say tanchumen to him because after 30 days, the grief of the avelos has lessened, and therefore, as the Gemara is going to say soon, it's not really appropriate at that point to be offering him tanchumen. It's just like it's just going to make him remember it all over again. We had actually earlier in the Masechta, we had that we said 30 days before Yom Tov, you're not allowed to have a guy going around and then calling on people to join in the Avelos, because then during the 30 days, you do it within 30 days before Yom Tov, you're going to be thinking about it on Yom Tov as well. It's going to disturb the joy of Yom Tov. So by the same token over here, after 30 days have passed, after Shloshim have passed, then you don't go and do Nichum Avelim to the person. Instead, you just shoyel b'shloim, right? And the Braisa continues, Mesa Ishtoi, suppose that it's the man's wife passed away, the Nosa Isha Acheres, and he got married again. Now, when are we talking about that he remarried? So Rashi and Tosfos both say that we're talking about within Shloshim. So how are you allowed to marry that soon? So Tosfos brings a couple of possibilities. First of all, Rabbi Tam says that Bechlal, after Shiva, a person is allowed to get remarried. The halacha is not necessarily like that, but Rabbi Natam holds that. Also, Tosfos points out that you do have cases where he is allowed to get married during Shloshim, according to everybody, namely, if he has little kids, he needs a stepmother to help take care of them. So then he'd be allowed to get married. So then he'd be allowed to get married right away, as soon as Shiva is over. And then he just has to wait with Be'ila until 30 days. So in any case, the point is that you have cases where he gets married during Shloshim. So the Braisa says, so you're not allowed to go into his house to offer him tanchomin because that's going to make his new wife feel bad. But if you find the guy doing shloshim in the street, then you say to him, you say to him, b'safa rafa, like with a soft voice of a kovid rosh and in a serious tone. In other words, you don't tell him a regular shalom aleichem. You do it like that, like you're showing that the gravity of the situation, because during shloshim. So we see, therefore, that we said. Now we said before in the Braisa, shoyel meshiv kedavka, but here we're saying that during shloshim, it's not that even the other guy is saying shalom to him. So he says b'safa rafa over kovid rosh. So the answer is Amen of Idi Ba'ovin. What it means is who shoyel b'shloim acherim. He, after Shiva, can ask after other people's welfare. He himself, is when we say shoyel k'dauke, means doing shloshim. He's allowed to say shalom aleichem to other people because nothing wrong with them. Shacherim, shurim b'shalom. After all, they themselves are in shalom, so nothing wrong with him asking about their shalom. Acherim, ain't shoyel b'shloim. But other people are not allowed to say shalom aleichem to him. Shuhu en yishori b'shalom, because he's not in a state of shalom because he's still doing shloshim. So like Mara says, "Bahamid katani meishiv mekal b'shaylin alei." What do you mean, though? We said that he can answer to somebody else's shalom. That implies that they initiated it to him. So why, according to what we just said, according to what Rav Idi Ba'oven said, they shouldn't be able to because he's not in shalom. The answer is deloyadi. Okay, we're talking about where they didn't know that he's in avelos. So Meshiv would be, in other words, they didn't know that he's in Avelos, but anybody who knows should not be asking him, should not be saying Shalom to him within 30 days. So the Gemara says, Ihochi Hosem Nami, nu. So why don't we say the same thing to even during the first 3 days as well? Why don't we say if somebody doesn't know that he's sitting Shiva during those first 3 days, then he shouldn't, then we're saying that then he should be able to answer him. Why are we saying that during the first 3 days, Einei Meshiv, he doesn't respond at all? The answer is Hosam Moidalahu Voloy Mahadalahu. The difference is that in that case, during the first 3 days, if they say shalom to him, then he instead of answering them with the shalom, he instead informs them, I am an oval and I can't answer your shalom. But after, so Voloy Mahadalahu, so he tells them, I'm an oval, and he tells them, therefore I'm not answering your shalom aleichem. Hocha loy tzorich loy de'inu, as opposed to in the case after Shiva, then he doesn't even have to inform them. He can just answer them, Shalom Aleichem. So they shouldn't be asking him, Shalom Aleichem. And if they knew better, if they knew that he was an oval, they wouldn't. But like this, when they didn't know, then he's allowed to answer Shalom Aleichem to them normally. So as far as this matter of She'elas Shalom, so the Ritva summarizes it as follows. So during the first 3 days, again, he doesn't initiate Shalom Aleichem to anybody. And if anybody else does, then he informs them, I'm an oval. During the next 4 days, we're saying that during the next 4 days until the end of Shiva, if somebody says Shalom Aleichem to him, then he can answer them. Meshiv doesn't necessarily have to mean that he tells them I'm an oval, but he doesn't initiate the greeting. After that, we're saying that during the remainder of Shloshim, so they shouldn't be asking him if they don't know. But if they don't know, then he is allowed to answer them. Well, actually, no. I think the Ritva says actually that during the remaining 4 days, also he would have to during the remaining days until Shloshim. So if they ask him Shalom Aleichem, not knowing that he's an oval, then he doesn't have to tell them I'm an oval. He can answer them. He can answer them Aleichem Shalom. But during the days before that, no, he would have to inform them instead that he's an oval. Mefushim point out, by the way, that the Gemara tells us in Brachas that if somebody says Shalom and you don't answer back Shalom, then it's like you're stealing from them. So therefore, you have to answer something. You can't just ignore them. With that said, by the way, people are not always careful about this thing of Shelas Shalom to an oval. And even in the times of the Rishonim, they already commented on that people are careless with that. Different Rishonim talk about ways to try to justify that practice. One possibility is maybe the way we do She'elas Shalom nowadays is not the way they did it in the old days. In the old days, it would be not only that you're saying Shalom, but you're also bowing to him. Nowadays, we just say Shalom Aleichem, maybe shake their hand. So maybe it's different. With that said, though, they say you should try to be careful with it, but you know, the Maisa people are not so careful with it, so it's kind of hard to uphold. So the Gemara says, Uraminu. I have a further contradiction on this then. You're telling me that after 30 days, then you go back to normal things with Shalom. But a Braisa says, Hamotzes chaveri ovel b'soich yud beis chodesh. If a person finds somebody else in Avelus within the 12 months after the death, then he says tanchumen, he says words of comfort to him. He does not say Shalom Aleichem to him. After 12 months, he's meeting him for the first time after 12 months since the passing. Then he says Shalom Aleichem to him. He does not say Tanchumen to him. But he can speak kind of from the side. In other words, Tanchumen would be directly to say, I'm so sorry that Pliny, your relative, passed away, and I want to be menachem you for it. Minatzad would just be to say general to say a more general statement that I my condolences or hamokem menachem eschem or something like that, a more general statement without mentioning the specific mess. So we're saying that only after 12 months do you do she'elas shalom. During the 12 months you don't. And the Braisa continues. If a person finds somebody else after 12 months and says tanchumen to him, the specific kind of tanchumen, where then he's just bringing it out again, where the person after 12 months, usually a person to a certain extent forgets about his mess, and then he doesn't think about him on an ongoing basis. And then if you give him tanchumim at that point, then it's like you're ripping it open all over again. So the mayor says that lamahu doima, what would that be like? La'adam shenishbara ragloi, imagine you have a person whose leg is broken, v'choisan, it healed, matzai reifa, and then a doctor meets up with him, v'omaloi, and the doctor tells him, kloch etzli, come to me, shani shovra v'erpa'ena, and I'll re-break your foot, and I'll heal it, so that you know that the medicines that I have for this purpose are very good. Now, obviously, the guy is never going to accept such an offer. What do you mean? The foot's already healed. There's no reason for me. I don't need to see how good your medicines are. So the same way, Reb Meir is saying, to say tanchumen to somebody after 12 months is just like re-breaking the leg in order to show off, like, look how good I can be menachem you. So you don't do that. The point is, though, that the Braisa is saying, that so the mayor is not disagreeing with the Tanakama. In other words, he's clarifying why is the Tanakama saying that after 12 months you don't do Tanchumen, because at that point it would just be like re-breaking the leg again. Anyway, the point is though that we see that only after 12 months are you sure you'll be shleimer, whereas before we said 30 days. And the answer is like Kasha, Hob Oviv Imoy Hob Shau Kroven. It depends whether we're talking about that his parents passed away, or that one of his parents passed away, or one of the other five relatives. So the other five relatives after Shloshim, you're allowed to do She'elas Shalom. For parents, you have to wait 12 months. So the Gemara asked, Hosam Nami Yidabu Imetan Chumen Minatzad. Okay, so in the Braisa, we said that after 30 days, and we said now that means for other relatives, then you say Tanchumen Minatzad. Then you say, you don't say direct tanchumen, but you say sort of indirect tanchumen. You say my condolences or something. And now we said that after 12 months, you don't do tanchumen at all. So why not? You should be able to do tanchumen when that's sad. The Gemara says, Eino chanami. That's in fact what it means. Umay, eino medabra imi tanchumen means kedavri. You don't do normal tanchumen, even when it's the person's parents, after 12 months. But even after 12 months, you could say, even after 12 months for parents, the same way as after 30 days for other relatives, you can still say in a general way, my condolences without mentioning the specific mess, and therefore, which would be like Romeo said, re-breaking the leg. But you could, even later on, you could say minatsad. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.